So we're just going to run through what we think are some of the most interesting recent cases, and I hope you enjoy it. Deborah, I think we're starting with you. Is that okay?
We are. And with great gratitude to the Supreme Court, we now know that rejection of a contract does not equal rescission. And we've all struggled with that issue for years, and now we know the answer, which is not true. To the decision. So the Mission Products Holding versus Technology, they should not pay cases that I can't say the name, was the issue of trademarks. You know, we all know that trademarks are not included in the definition of intellectual property. So the question became, what do you do with a trademark when you reject it? And I think Bill's and my recommendation is you don't ever reject an executive trademark ever again. Because what the Supreme Court says, rejection of a contract, executory contract, does not equal rescission. Okay, but let's play that one out. And Bill asked me some really hard questions. So what happens if you reject a trademark contract? That means you have no obligations under the contract, right? You have no obligations to maintain anything. You have no obligations to pay. So you have the counterparty gets to keep the trademark with no rights, responsibilities, or duties. That's an awesome result if you're the recipient of the trademark. But would you ever, Bill, reject a trademark agreement? No.
I can't think of any reason. You can't turn around and sell it again. So
nope.
What can you do?
And what they said was, and there's some quotes in there that are fun, said damages can accrue due to the related loss of the use of the trademark, but it's a crystal clear, there's no ruling, and we're not going to give you a ruling, that the trademark cannot be used by the counterparty. And so now, for those of us who, and you're thinking in cases, you'd rather have a trademark than a patent. Because a patent, at least, if you reject it, you have some rights and responsibilities. For trademark, I don't know. They didn't answer the question, but I'm not sure what you have to do if you're the party to a rejected trademark agreement, ever. Think about it. And then tell your client. And this is a practical point. If you're working with your firm and you do a lot of kind of intellectual property licensing, they need to really be thinking about the consequences of doing a trademark license, because if the counterparty, if the licensee files bankruptcy, then no big deal. Licensor files bankruptcy and they think, I want my license back because the licensee is, you know, in the future will not be adequately protecting my trademark or has not been protecting my trademark. What you're left with is a claim for damages, and I think that's about it.
That's right. There's an aspect of this opinion that I think is very important in terms of Supreme Court's view of bankruptcy. The First Circuit, and I think also the Fourth Circuit in the old Lubrizol decision, based their notion or their result on the idea that, well, we have to stop a licensee from using a contract or a trademark, because that will promote reorganization. It'll give the debtor something to turn around and sell again. But the Supreme Court didn't buy into that. Because there's language in this opinion which says that a bankruptcy court doesn't have license to go out and do equity.
To rewrite the statute, essentially.
Right. So this is a big deal. I hate to say it, but you can make a very strong case based upon Supreme Court authority from the last 5 years in particular, that the bankruptcy court, in fact, is not a court of equity, that you are strictly bound by the bankruptcy code. If the bankruptcy code doesn't have an answer, you don't go to policy questions. You go to either state law or federal common law.
Or actually, I take it a different way. I think the bankruptcy code had the answer. A trademark license is like any other contract.
Right.
What you can't do is go beyond the code to come up with a policy argument and say, yeah, that's what it means, but not here. And I think that's the takeaway from this decision. Less so about trademarks, more about interpreting the statute and the ability of bankruptcy courts or circuit courts, anybody else, to look for nuanced around the statutory language.
Right.
Well, aside from being utterly relieved that they didn't screw this one up, which I was very much afraid they were going to do, I also think that the court, for what it's worth, I think the court is profoundly wrong about bankruptcy law, that there are independent bankruptcy policies that should be considered. Of course, everything starts with the code and then with state or other federal law, in this case, patent and trademark law. But nonetheless, at the end of the day, there are important bankruptcy policies that, even though they got this one right, I'm afraid they may be ignoring in other cases.
Well, you know,
to your point, I mean, the problem is the executory contract language is so crystal clear. They wouldn't go beyond that for another policy, but I think Bill's point is right, which is if you don't have language that maybe you're missing a comma or something, you might be able to go to something else, legislative history, and we all know how that works for statutory interpretation. But I think it's a stretch.